From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, the show's executive producer in today for John Schaefer. Ahead on Soundcheck, for some of us, watching a baseball game is the perfect way to kick back. But if you don't have, say, 3.5 hours to spare, you can still listen to The Baseball Project play live in our studio. Their songs are filled with the heroes and villains from the game's history. One player who might qualify as both, depending on your fan loyalty, Pittsburgh Pirates pitcher Doc Ellis, who on May 1st, 1974, tried to hit every single batter in the Cincinnati Reds lineup with a pitch.
Down went Rose, down went Morgan, down went Dreesen, he took one right in the organ.
We'll dig into baseball history with the rock veterans of The Baseball Project later on the show. Now, for many of you, baseball isn't the way you unwind. It's music. All this week, you've been giving us your song picks for the most relaxing playlist ever, part of WNYC's Sleep Project. Here's one of your picks.
Hi, I'm Victoria from Middletown, New Jersey. The song I most often fall asleep to, which I guess is my most relaxing song, is Dogs by Pink Floyd from their album Animal.
Thanks, Victoria. We'll hear more of your relaxing song picks later in the show. But first, one recent afternoon in the Soundcheck office, the staff got to talking about great songs and how they leave you hungry for more. And that got us talking about sequels. Now, sequels are common in Hollywood, maybe too common if you ask some people, but songwriters rarely opt to write the next chapter of their great songs. So Soundcheck is going to do it for them. And we've enlisted some help. Mario Correa is a writer and a co-host of Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM. Welcome back, Mario.
Hi.
And Mo Rocca is a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning. You can hear him on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me every now and then, and you can catch his new show, My Grandmother's Ravioli, on the Cooking Channel. Hey, Mo.
How are you? Good to be here, Joel.
Well, I am really excited. This is a little bit of an experiment. We'll see how it goes. But before we start, I need to ask you both, do you have any anxiety about proposing a sequel? As we know in Hollywood, with the exception of The Godfather 2, sequels are never better than the first film. Mo, what do you think?
I'm a little bit nervous about essentially trying to rewrite a classic or put an ending on something that was so kind of perfectly tied up with a bow as it is. But the good thing is no one will ever remember these sequels because the originals were so great. Does anybody remember the name of the sequel of Gone with the Wind? Was it Went with the Wind?
Oh, it was Scarlet, right?
Scarlet. Yeah. It was Scarlet. Mm-hmm. That's right. And Mario, we've really picked out three. Would you call these classic songs?
No.
No, okay.
With quotation marks, maybe.
Yeah, maybe with quotation. They're classically interesting. I don't know how to call them classics.
I'm going to call them familiar.
Okay.
I think that's a good word. Mo, let's kick off with you and our first song from Cher. Tell us about Dark Lady.
Well, Dark Lady is about the fortune queen of New Orleans, and she drives around a black limousine. She's a fortune teller, and she has a cat in the back seat, and like, she brushes this cat. There's scratch marks in the seat, but I think we know from the beginning that the scratch marks aren't really made by the cat. It's by the men that she entertains in this limousine. Young couple spies the Dark Lady when the back seat of her car is open on a street, I guess, somewhere in New Orleans. I'm not sure what area it was in. But in any case, and the woman is fascinated by her, and she gets in a car and follows the Dark Lady back to her where do Dark Ladies live?
In lairs? Nests?
In lairs. Her lair. She follows her back to her lair. And
it's where she mates and she kills.
It's where she
mates. It's like the Black Widow spider.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so, and I guess she asks for a card reading because that's what the Dark Lady does. At least that's what we find out is one of her jobs. And in the course of having her cards read, she realizes that the Dark Lady has actually been sleeping with her husband. And this is something apparently that the Dark Lady does. It's an interesting business plan. She lures men in. I don't know if she prostitutes herself. And then what she does for added value is she
takes a little gravy for herself.
Exactly, by 100%. Reading cards for the women whose husbands and lovers she's taken. And then everyone dies in the end. The dark lady and the lover and the husband, the boyfriend of the woman who realizes she's been betrayed, kills both of them.
Well, that sounds perfectly straightforward. Let's hear just a little clip of Dark Lady from Cher from 1974.
The fortune queen of New Orleans is brushing her cat in her black limousine. On the back seat were scratches from the marks of men her fortune she had won. Couldn't see through the tinted glass. She said, "Home, James," and he hit the gas. I followed her to some darkened room. She took my money. She said, "I'll be with you soon." Dark lady laughed and danced and lit the candles one by one. Danced to her gypsy music till her blue was dawn. Dark lady played black magic till the clock struck on the 12. She told me more about me than I knew myself.
Dark Lady by Cher from 1974. The subject of our song sequel segment here, my guest in the studio, Mario Correa, co-host of Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM, and Mo Rocca, correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, and host of the show My Grandmother's Ravioli on the Cooking Channel.
May I jump in for a second? Because I feel like my summary was so inadequate. No, it did. Because the pivotal moment in this is the perfume, because she smells the perfume in the Dark Lady's lair.
Right.
And I guess her own perfume.
In 1974, there would be probably Charlie, right? Charlie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or which one with the one with the lion that jumps at you? Do you remember that one? You do remember. Mo and I grew up together.
Yes.
I knew you remember this.
Mario, how successful was this song?
Oh, it was a huge hit for Cher. It was a number one hit for Cher because America in the early 70s really craved itself some sort of New Orleans darkness, mm-hmm. I guess. And crazy enough, she had two videos for it. One was a live video of her performing it on the Sonny and Cher show. Is that what it's called? Sonny and Cher show? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then she also did a cartoon video version where basically Cher is in cartoon and Cher is the dark lady in the limousine with the cat, and there's like a shooting in this car. The whole thing is done through animation. It's like Sunday morning cartoon.
It's unbelievable, the idea that this could be a Saturday morning cartoon. Only on Logo. That's where you would find these Saturday morning cartoons.
That's probably where it lives today, is on Logo.
But Mike, and it's nothing like the claymation Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves.
All right. Well, we'll post that for listeners to watch on soundcheck.org. Let's move on to the sequel. Now, this story does not. This story ends badly. The last line of the song is "Dark Lady would never turn a card up anymore." It seems pretty finite that we know what's happening. Let's start with the sequel. Who wants to kick it off?
Okay, so in my sequel, the limousine is really the most important thing, because what kind of fortune teller drives in a limousine, right? So now at the end, when the woman whose husband the dark lady was sleeping with kills the dark lady and her own husband, she's left with the limousine, not to mention the white cat. So she thinks, what do I do with this limo? And in the sequel, she basically starts a car service. And that limo becomes the very first in what would eventually grow to be Carmel limo and car service, because when you dial that number, it's 666-6666. Mm-hmm. How dark is that?
Yeah,
dark lady.
For non-New Yorkers in our audience, Carmel is a frequently used car service. It's interesting.
And I think it's national now. You can
even
dial it nationally. Yeah.
See, that's the kind of New Yorker I am. I'm just sort of like, well, just to like let the rest of the country know about important things that happen
in
New York.
I mean, the success of the dark lady is that she went national after that incident, and the cars are everywhere.
Mo, your sequel?
Well, in my sequel, The woman who has killed the Dark Lady and her cheating husband is prosecuted in the state of Rhode Island, where this takes place, this song takes place, and crimes of passion are a legitimate defense. So she actually gets off for killing these two people. And in a quirky twist of fate, meanwhile, in another crime of passion that's happening down south, there is an opening now for the position of headmistress at the elite Madeira School in Virginia. And so the so this woman ends up accepting that post because Jean Harris, after killing the Scarsdale Diet writer and his lover, is in prison. And so they need somebody at that school. So she goes on to a very respected career as a headmistress.
I think it's really interesting that both of you have the fortune teller queen of New Orleans end up – I mean, things end up really pretty well for her.
Oh, for the woman who takes her place. Yeah, because the Dark Lady is the fortune teller.
I see,
now,
I see.
She's
okay, I'm
gone.
Getting confused.
But it's very confusing, purposely so. And that's the funny thing about all these songs we picked for today. It's incredible how confusing people would make these songs when they wrote them in the early 70s. They really like these gothic stories.
It's so confusing that I mistook New Orleans for being in the state of Rhode Island.
That's what made the most sense.
Can we take that back?
Look, she traveled. She was in New Orleans, then in Providence.
Okay, I wish I could tell people that things are going to get simpler from this point on, but the songs get only more complicated. I'm talking to Mario Correa, co-host of Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM, and Mo Rocca of CBS Sunday Morning. What we're doing is we're talking about song sequels, or we're proposing some song sequels, hypothetical next chapters to much-loved, or maybe not much-loved, but definitely finite pop songs. So we're going to move on to our next song. Mario, why don't you help us introduce Harry Chapin's Taxi?
Yeah, now this song is a song that a lot of people know in the original or in covers. It was sort of like a classic. It launched Harry Chapin's career. It was a number 24 hit for him back in 1972. And it's very narrative, just like Dark Lady is. And in this story, Harry is the narrator's name, much like Harry Chapin. I'm guessing that's where it comes from. And he is a taxi driver, and he has just picked up his last fare for the night in San Francisco, a woman named Sue. And she climbs into the back seat, and he looks at her, and thus begins like every New Yorker's worst nightmare when your cab driver starts talking to you. So he basically says to her, like, oh, like, we know each other. And she's like, I don't think so. And he's like, all right. And he does it again until basically they realize that they used to date. And they have this conversation. And they basically realize, like, oh my gosh, we used to date. They both had all these dreams. He wanted to be a pilot. Instead, he's a taxi driver. She wanted to be a great actress. Instead, she's married to a rich guy and is unhappy.
And she walked away in silence. It's strange how you never know. But we'd both gotten what we'd asked for such a long, long time ago. You see, she was gonna be an actress, and I was gonna learn to fly. She took off to find the footlights, I took off for the sky. And here she's acting happy inside her handsome home. And me, I'm flying in my taxi, taking tips and getting stoned. I go flying so high when I'm stoned.
That's Harry Chapin and Taxi, his big hit. Well, number 24, but covered many, many different times. I'm Joel Meyer, in today on Soundcheck for John Schaefer, here with Mo Rocca of CBS Sunday Morning and Mario Correa, co-host of Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM. Song sequels is what we're attempting today, and we're going to try and figure out what the next chapter of that song, Taxi, by Harry Chapin, should be. We know that, again, this song has ended badly as well, much like our first song. Mo Rocca, your sequel to Harry Chapin's Taxi.
Boy, I didn't realize it was a metaphor. I thought that he really did want to fly. And so I had him becoming a flight attendant, finally. Becoming a flight attendant and working the first class cabin and then seeing her there. and then approaching her again, being rebuffed, getting very drunk and doing something obscene with a drinks cart and getting fired. And that was kind of the end of it for me.
It could just keep going on. I mean, there could be a taxi 3, a taxi 4, yeah, all with different modes of transportation. He could be on like a cruise liner in 3. It could keep going on to trains.
There
and
could
so
be
on.
An entire TV series built around it. Or wasn't it? No, I guess no.
He could get a mohawk.
Mario Correa, tell us what your sequel is.
So in my sequel, Sue gets out of the taxi, walks very briskly up to her front door, as briskly as she can without thinking he can follow her, goes inside, deadbolts that door, and calls 911 because, of course, she's never seen Harry in her life. And she was just so frightened that this guy was, like, being so predatory. Like, oh, yeah, we used to date. We used to date, even though she said, no, we didn't. So she basically calls 911.
On a rotary dial phone.
Of course, of course. Eventually, Harry loses his medallion because it's learned that every woman who gets in the cab, or man for that matter, he says, hey, we used to date. And this routine has happened tens of thousands of times. And now poor Harry is an MTA conductor. He conducts the G train. I know this because this morning I got onto the G train to come to soundcheck and he stopped and goes, hey, Mario, I know you. We used to date. And I was like, Harry, save it. Save it. Save it.
That's amazing. I can see the phones lighting up in the soundcheck office from Hollywood producers wanting to green light that baby.
Actually, that's I love that.
That's pretty good. I'm taking some notes.
Oh, well, you know, he actually did do a sequel. Harry Chapin actually did.
He did?
Yeah, he actually did do a sequel. And the sequel, the real sequel, they did in like the 81, I think it was, yeah, which was a number 23 hit. Harry ends up being a successful musician. She ends up leaving her husband and living like in this little house and they run into each other again. So weirdly, he thought of that sequel idea as well.
And the tables were turned?
Exactly.
And the look on her face as she opened the door was like an old joke told by a friend. It'd taken 10 more years, but she'd found her smile, and I watched the corner start to bend. And she said, how are you, Harry? Haven't we played this scene before? I said, it's so good to see you, Sue. Had to play it out just once more. Play it out just once more.
I'm Joel Meyer in today for John Schaefer on Soundcheck, here with Mo Rocca, correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning. You can catch his show, My Grandmother's Ravioli, on the Cooking Channel. And also with me is Mario Correa, someone you hear pretty frequently here on Soundcheck. He's also co-host of Entertainment Weekly Radio on Sirius XM. Song sequels is what we're doing today, figuring out hypothetical next chapters to famous pop songs. Mario, why don't you introduce this stiff drink called The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia.
Oh, my God. This is like, Mo and I were talking earlier, and we decided this was like the Cloud Atlas of pop songs. This is the most confusing, elaborate pop song you'll ever hear. It was recorded in 1972, funny enough, by Vicki Lawrence, who was on the Carol Burnett Show at the time. And it was written by her husband, Bobby Russell. And he had offered the song to Cher, who actually Sonny turned it down on Cher's behalf. Never even saw it. He had thought about Liza Minnelli doing it,
right? Vicki Lawrence in a recent interview disclosed that.
And no one was going to sing it. So basically Vicki Lawrence, Bobby Russell's wife at the time, decided to record a demo of it. They released the song, and it became a huge number one hit in 1973. Now, the story of the song, all right, let's try to work this together.
This really makes my head hurt.
Okay, brace yourselves, everybody.
So Vicki Lawrence is the narrator. Let's just call her Vicki Lawrence for simplicity's sake. She is talking about her brother. Let's call him Bro for simplicity's sake, because his name is never mentioned in the song.
He doesn't have a name, that's right.
He doesn't have everyone else has a name. There's literally like eight names in this song. Yeah. The main character, the Bro, is not one of them. So the Bro comes in. He talks to his friend Andy at this bar, and Andy said, hey, welcome back to town. By the way, your young wife is sleeping with this guy named Seth, and while I'm at it, I should tell you I've also been sleeping with her.
Points for honesty.
Yeah, for sure.
Said, I'm your best friend, and you know that's right, but your young bride ain't home tonight. Since you've been gone, she's been seeing that Amos boy, Seth. Well, he got mad, and he saw red, and
Andy said, boy, don't you lose your head, 'cause to tell you the truth, I've been with her myself.
This understandably upsets Bro, and that scares Andy, his best friend. So Andy runs out of the bar into his home. So Bro goes to fetch a gun.
At his father's house,
at his
right?
father's okay, house, right. Whose name is not mentioned, thank God.
Right.
So it's just Bro. He's got a gun. He goes to find Andy. But when he sees Andy, Andy is now dead on the floor in a pool of blood.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Now here's where Bro really makes his mistake.
Well, the Georgia patrol wasn't making their rounds, so we fired a shot just to flag them down. And a big-bellied sheriff grabbed his gun and said, why'd you do it?
And we should point out that there's some footprints, right?
Yes, because when Bro shows up and sees that Andy is dead, he sees small footprints, smaller than Andy. So he's like, oh, who did this? But stupidly, he like fires that shot in the air, like Mo said, to get the sheriff's attention. Well, of course, the sheriff's going to, you know, be at attention at that point.
Right.
Sees this guy dead, Andy, takes in Bro. There's basically like a kangaroo court whereby the judge convicts Bro, in a moment.
Are we near the end?
Oh, no. Oh, we're not even to the chorus.
No.
And I've seen, there's videos of Vicki Lawrence performing this on YouTube where she says, pay attention now, there's going to be a quiz at the end. Long story short, Bro is convicted, hung in a kangaroo court. Sister is very mad. Sister being the narrator, being Vicki Lawrence, and she reveals that in fact...
that she was the person who had done it because her own husband, an off-screen character here... had been sleeping with her sister-in-law, and then the judge was complicit in all this because he had been sleeping with her. Basically, this woman
that's
slept with everyone in the town.
Yeah.
His cheating wife had never left town, and that's one body that'll never be found. See, little sister don't miss when she aims her gun. That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. Oh, oh, oh. That's the night that they haunted the innocent man.
The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, sung by Vicki Lawrence, a number one hit for her.
And she has got a little bit of a Mama's Family twang in there.
She does. You can see Mo Rocca where she's going, where she's headed, towards total stardom on Mama's Family. Mario Correa is also here with me. Mario, that is a tall drink of water, that song.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, that song is iconic. It inspired a movie, I think in 1981, with Christy McNichol. And Mark Hamill, it inspired...
Naturally.
One of my favorite Designing Women bits many years later with Dixie Carter referencing. I mean, it's really like a pop culture diamond, the song.
All right. Well, I don't know really quite how you guys can move on from this because there's already so much story in one song. Mo Rocca, what's your sequel?
Well, in my sequel... this obviously attracts national attention, if only because this woman apparently slept with everyone in the town. But it really goes way up to the top. The aldermen of this town, the mayor are involved, and it's a democratically controlled town. And the Republican-controlled U.S. Congress decides to take control of the town and appoint a board of overseers. And so it goes under federal control until... Kim Basinger, actress Kim Basinger, buys the town at auction. And so she ends up redeeming the town. So she's really the hero of this story.
And that sounds like a catchy song as well. Like that has written all over it.
It's the night the lights went back on in Georgia, courtesy of Kim Basinger.
Rhyme something with Kim Basinger, I dare you.
All right, Mario Correa, how do you top The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia?
Really, my sequel is really a song of justice denied. And in my sequel, the narrator, the Vicki Lawrence character, because her brother has been wrongly convicted and hung, never mind that she did it, she goes on to get a job and become an activist with the Innocence Project, advocating on behalf of wrongly convicted individuals.
Truth to power.
Yeah. Now, it becomes a little awkward in the office because everyone else in the Innocence Project is like, well, yeah, but you actually did kill somebody, and you killed actually two people, so maybe you working at the Innocence Project, not so good for the Innocence Project. So she's kind of forced out. So she has no choice at that point but to really meet her destiny and become a real housewife of Atlanta, which is what she is to this day. She's on the Real Housewives franchise for Atlanta. And like all of the housewives, she has her own line of something. You know, they all have their own line, their own drink, their own song. She has a line now of baby pajamas called Lights Out, and she's very successful.
Well, that's That just sounds terrific.
It is terrific. It's a great story. It should happen to every family.
It's the only product that a Real Housewife shilling that actually would help people, right?
Mario Correa is co-host of Entertainment Weekly Radio on SiriusXM, and Mo Rocca is a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning. You can catch his show, My Grandmother's Ravioli, on the Cooking Channel. Mario and Mo, thanks a lot. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joel.
Up next on Soundcheck, more of your picks from our most relaxing playlist ever. And later on the show, live music from indie rock's biggest baseball fans, The Baseball Project. I'm Joel Meyer, in for John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, the show's executive producer, in this week for John Schaefer. Now, all this week, we're enlisting your help in picking songs for something we're calling the most relaxing playlist ever. It's part of WNYC's Stationwide Sleep Project. You can find out how to clock your sleep at wnyc.org/sleep. So let's hear some of your song picks for this crowdsourced, ultra-relaxing playlist. First...
Hi, my name is Jordan. I'm from Croton-on-Hudson, New York, and I think the most relaxing song in the entire universe is Will-O-The-Wisp by Miles Davis and Gil Evans off the Sketches of Spain album. It's so atmospheric and so slow and very easygoing, and it's unrushed, and Miles does a lot of his very evocative playing on the record. Will-O-The-Wisp on the Sketches of Spain record is the most relaxing song in the universe. Thank you. Love the show. Ta-ta.
Will-O-The-Wisp by Miles Davis from the album Sketches of Spain, picked by our listener Jordan. Here's another.
Hi, my name is Marcia from Ronkonkoma. One of the most relaxing songs I've ever heard is Night Swimming from R.E.M.
I forgot my shirt at the water's edge. The moon is low tonight.
I used to listen to it on a track repeat to go to sleep at night when I was in high school.
Night swimming deserves a quiet night. I'm not sure all these people understand. It's not like years ago. Recklessness of water, they cannot see me naked. These things, they go away, replaced by every day. Night swimming, remembering that night.
That's Night Swimming by R.E.M., picked by our listener Marcia. Now, Marcia, stick around. Our musical guests, The Baseball Project, have a deep REM connection. That's coming up in just a little bit. We're listening to some of your picks for Soundcheck's most relaxing playlist ever.
Hi, my name is Lauren Welsh, and I'm from Detroit. And I think the most relaxing song is Aqueous Transition by Incubus. Thank you.
We'll be right back. Our listener Lauren from Detroit kicks back to that song. It's called Aqueous Transmission by the band Incubus. We want to know, what's your favorite relaxing song? You can post it on soundcheck.org, or you can tell us the story behind your song in a voicemail at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. We'll post a crowdsourced playlist of all your picks on Thursday, and we'll champion some of your picks on a top 10 list of our favorite submissions. So make sure you check soundcheck.org and tune into the show on Thursday. Still to come, a live in-studio session from the Baseball Project. We'll hear songs about Alex Rodriguez, Babe Ruth, and a minor player who had one of the shortest big league careers in baseball history. I'm Joel Meyer, in this week for John Schaefer. That's coming up next here on Soundcheck.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, in today for John Schaefer. We're just a few weeks into the baseball season, and for me, 2014 is looking a lot like 2013. The Minnesota Twins are clinging to fourth place in the AL Central Division, and my fantasy team is currently ranked 11th. It is a 12-team league. The good news, though, is that there's a new album out from the Baseball Project, the indie rock supergroup, whose members have played with indie bands like The Minus Five, The Dream Syndicate, Zuzu's Pedals, Young Fresh Fellows, and a scrappy indie outfit called REM. The Baseball Project's newest album is called Third, and today three of the band members, Steve Wynn, Scott McCoy, and Linda Pittman, are here in our New York studio to play an ode to the greatest Yankee of them all. It's called The Babe. This is The Baseball Project, live on Soundcheck.
They don't make them like they used to, and it's sure that they never will again. Let it be said right now, more than ever before, that the babe was a giant amongst men. Oh, the babe was a giant amongst men. So many balls flying over a fence. There can be no doubt that the babe changed the game more than anyone before or since. The house that Ruth built, the curse of the Bambino, the Sultan of Swat, the King of Swing. In thousands of headlines, in millions of hearts, Babe Ruth was everything. They don't make them like they used to, and it's sure that they never will again. Let it be said right now, than ever before, that the babe was a giant amongst men. Oh, the babe was a giant amongst men. Johnny Sylvester at Wrigley Field, did he call his shot? When you're larger than legend, when you're almost a god, doesn't matter what is real or what is not. Sure, but they never will again. Let it be said right now, more amongst men.
That's the Baseball Project live on Soundcheck with a song called The Babe. It also appears on their new album called Third that is out now. You heard Scott McCoy singing on that song and playing piano. Steve Wynn played guitar and Linda Pittman is behind our drum kit. Three of the core members of the Baseball Project. You know, The Babe may be a giant among men, but the Baseball Project is a giant among bands that play songs about baseball. So to the three of you,
thanks, Joel.
Three of you, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
Good to be
here.
We're
thanks,
a towering
Joel.
Inferno amongst baseball bands.
Not that hot outside.
Well, so you've started us out with a song about probably one of the best-known baseball players that has ever been, ever will be. I mean, there's got to be more songs about Babe Ruth than just that. Is this just the latest in a canon?
I'm sure in the 20s there were probably hundreds of them, literally, you know, that all came out on sheet music. And people, you know, I'm sure people tried to have hit records with them. Some of them were probably popular. I mean, he was not only, like, the best baseball player, he was really, like, the most famous guy in the world, basically, for a while there, you know. We sort of shied away in a way from doing songs about real iconic players. Lots of times we were more attracted to people that nobody had ever heard of.
There's some misfits that appear on this album, for example. We'll talk about that.
On this record, I thought, you know, it's time. You know, we should write a song about Hank Aaron. We should write a song about Babe Ruth. You know, let's go for it. So I wanted it to have, though, a little bit of a nostalgic feel for it. So I pictured it with Tom Waits singing it, but I couldn't do it like that.
Well, it's not too late. If Tom Waits is out there, you know, there's a job waiting for you.
I'd love to hear him tackle it. I really would.
Well, that's Scott McCoy. Also here in the studio with us is Steve Wynn. And, Steve, I wanted to ask you about the name of the album. It's simply called Third. Now, your previous albums had great baseball jargon names like Frozen Ropes and Dying Quails, High and Inside, but now number three is simply Third. So why such a simple title?
Well, we went through, like bands do, we went through a lot of different title ideas, and we had all kinds of them. And really, we realized after a while, three is such an important number in baseball. You know, obviously, it's Babe Ruth's number, for starters, and he appears on the record cover. And, of course, three outs, three strikes, third base, all of that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then we actually have Babe Ruth appears in a couple of the songs. His number is discussed in actually one of the songs we're playing a little later today. And it just seemed the right thing to do. Also, we're tangentially all fans of Big Star, so why not toss it in there as well?
So that's what I thought of right away. There, you know, if you're an indie rock fan, Third is a very special record to you. Although technically it's Third Sister Lovers. It's like
right.
Third Slash.
Exactly. Yes.
That was the clincher.
You got to call it both names.
And we had to decide whether to spell it 3RD or Third, like renting it out, because it appears both ways in baseball, and it also appears both ways on the Big Star record.
Aha. Okay.
And our bass player is kind of in Big Star these days as well, so it all ties together.
Yeah.
Mike Mills.
Yeah.
The Baseball Project is here in the studio with me. I'm Joel Meyer. I'm sitting in for John Schaefer today. You've heard from Scott McCoy already and Steve Wynn. Also on the drum kit is Linda Pittman. Linda, I wanted to point out that I'm wearing my Twins jersey. I'm wearing my Twins cap, which I have had to turn around backwards because it is incompatible with the gigantic radio mic that is in front of me. So
but otherwise, you would never be seen with your cap on
right.
backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
This is a sort of Limp Bizkit look that I don't normally rock very much.
Yeah, you look great in those cargo shorts.
Yes. Yeah, right. Thanks for that. But Linda, I think I know the answer to this question, but we need to get this all out there in the open.
It is, we got
to
get it out there.
What is your team?
My team is the Minnesota Twins.
Well,
what is your team, Joel?
Mine just happens to be the Minnesota Twins as well, too.
How about that?
Okay. Well, I knew that you were a Minnesota Twins fan, but Steve and Scott, what are your teams?
Well, first of all, don't you need to mention what shirt Linda is wearing?
Linda is wearing, she's not wearing official licensed merchandise from Major League Baseball like I am. I just want to point that out. But you are wearing a sign that says, please don't call them Twinkies.
Right. Over a map of Minnesota.
Over a map of Minnesota. Can you explain?
That is the name of one of our songs on the last record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But explain for people who maybe aren't diehard granular baseball fans like the three of you, what's the deal with Twinkies?
I think it was Lombardozzi that said, you know, please don't call us Twinkies, and especially after they won. I think it was in 87 he said, you can't call us Twinkies anymore.
That's right.
So
I could recite the quote for you, but it might bring me to tears. I might get choked up. But it's very important.
That's what baseball do.
That's what baseball does. I'm here with the Baseball Project. You heard Linda Pittman. Also here with us is Scott McCoy and Steve Wynn. So Steve and Scott, what are your two teams? This is complicated.
It is a little bit, but I'm San Francisco Giants, and then Oakland A's, and then Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
Giants first, A's, Mariners. I root for all of them. And sometimes that's very difficult since the A's and the Mariners are in the same division. But, you know, I started with the Giants, then the A's came along, and then I lived in Seattle for 25 years. So, you know, I went to a lot of games there. So, yeah, you know, you got to kind of root for your...
Okay. It's diplomatic. Steve?
Home team a bit, yeah.
It's a similar story. I mean, we wrote a song about this on the last album because to address the story of our favorite teams was a song called Fairweather Fans, which, and, you know, you could say we are because Linda did mention she is a secondary Yankees fan because she's been here for almost 20 years now.
And I'm becoming a Mets fan because we moved to Jackson Heights.
It's so confusing.
We're very close to the stadium.
In a similar way, I grew up in Los Angeles, a Dodgers fan, but I'm primarily a Yankees fan now. I've been here long enough and been behind that team, and that's kind of my team. I'm a New Yorker now. L.A. is in the past.
Tim Tuffle took umbrage with my Giants hat at the game last night at Citi Field. Yeah, and they weren't even playing the Giants, but I was, you know, sporting my Giants hat. And
I hear that there's a picture of you guys with Mr. Met. Did you get a shot with Mr. Met?
It is actually on our Facebook page. Any of you want to look at the baseball
X-rated,
product Facebook
though.
Page?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think I your did. Facebook likes just went up like 400%.
Strange enough, with Mr. Met. Dressed in camo because it was camo night. It was military night at Citi Field last night. So Mr. Met was very distractingly sort of, you know, ready for war, ready for large-headed war,
or like ready to blend in the jungle.
Yeah, that's
the
it. Yeah, yes, exactly.
Like that. That's great.
Which I don't think he would. Somehow I think he would stand out even with the shirt. But you know, Mr. Met has to do what he can.
Well, we're going to move from the Mets to a different team in a short-lived career. That's the subject of your next song. You know, one thing that I love about your records so much is that they're filled with really, really great characters, much like just baseball history itself. That seems to be one of the treasure troves that you guys are able to mine a lot. And tell us the story of Larry Yount.
Well, you know, one thing about being in this band is you get people coming up to you all the time and saying, I've got a great song for you guys. You know, you guys should write a song about blah. And they're often very good ideas and also very often songs we've already written. But, it's amazing how often that happens. But having said that, we got a tour of the Baseball Hall of Fame a couple years back, and one of our tour guides said, do you know about Larry Yount? I went, I know about Robin Yount. And Robin Yount, for those of you not big baseball fans, is, you know, played shortstop with the Brewers and was one of the best player, Hall of Fame, a great player. Larry Yount is his older brother, and Larry came up first. I'll tell the whole story in the song, so I won't give it all away. But one thing he's most known for is he's the only pitcher in the history of the major leagues to have appeared in a game and not thrown a pitch. And if you look at his name in the record book, it says Larry Yount, one game, 0-0-0-0-0. And, you know, in the song, and you'll hear the whole story in the song. I don't want to tell it all and then tell it again in the song, but we kind of added a little bit of our own. You know, I wrote the song, added my sort of dramatic take, as we often do behind the song, and the epilogue of the whole thing, I'll tell you before we sing it, the epilogue before we tell you the whole story, is that Larry Yount did hear the song. Somehow when the record came out, immediately we started getting emails from his family, including his son, Cody Yount, who is a pitcher in the White Sox organization now, minor league pitcher, and he said, my dad heard the song, and I've never seen my dad cry in my life. But he was brought to tears when he heard the song.
Wow.
So, yeah, that meant a lot.
Well, we'll see what happens to me
at
the end of the song. I'm here in the studio with The Baseball Project. Their new album is called Third. It's out now. We're going to hear one of the songs that is on the album. It's Larry Yount. It's The Baseball Project live on Soundcheck.
My name is Larry Yount, and my story doesn't rise like a ripple on the tide. Late night I think what might have been, what might have been. The older of two brothers and the first to break from home, after years down in the minors, called up to the Astrodome. Houston, I was warming in the pen. Skipper said it's time to come in. Took my warm-up tosses and I felt something snap. They sent me down, they pulled me out, and then that was that. I never made it to the bigs again. That's where the story ought to end. My name is Larry Yount, and my story doesn't rise like a ripple on the tide. Late at night, I think what might have been, what might have been. The reason you might know my name is because of my brother's fame. 3 years passed by one day in the show. Robin got called up and he never let it go. After 20 years had passed, 3,000 hits had been amassed. Robin hit the Hall of Fame and immortality. Some band wrote a song about me. My name is Larry Yount, and my story doesn't rise like a ripple on the tide. Late at night, I think what might have been, what might have been. Sometimes at the holidays, we'll sit there with our kids. They walk past all the trophies and ask about the things I did. Uncle Robin, what's it like? Uncle Robin, tell us more about the World Series games and statistics and the scores. Sometimes it tears me up inside, though I can't help but feel pride. I find I'm back in Houston once again, thinking about the things that might have been. My name is Larry Yount, and my story doesn't rise like a ripple on the tide. Late at night, I think what might have been. My name is Larry Yount. My name is Larry Yount. My name is Larry Yount.
The Baseball Project, performing live here in the Soundcheck studio. The song is called Larry Yount, the story of the brother of a very, very famous baseball player. You heard Steve Wynn on lead vocals and playing guitar, Scott McCoy singing backups and playing bass. Linda Pittman is behind our drum kit. I'm Joel Meyer, in for John Schaefer today. Glad to be joined by the Baseball Project here in the studio. The next song that you're going to do is about Alex Rodriguez, but I think, you know, just as we found out where everybody stood with their favorite teams, maybe we need to find out where everybody is with Alex Rodriguez. So Linda, where do you fall with the Alex Rodriguez story? Currently, Alex Rodriguez serving a 162-game suspension for a connection to a performance-enhancing drugs scandal. Linda, where do you fall?
Well, I think Alex is going to do just fine. I'm not too worried about him. I feel like he's spending his downtime wisely, probably working out every day, you know, eating right, living healthy, calling his mom every day.
Socking money away.
Working out on some just blonde actress. That's what I
just
figured.
And just ready to get back in the game the minute they let him back, right? Isn't that when? And we'll all embrace him gladly.
I hope that they isn't any team I'm a fan of.
I'm being facetious here.
I was going to say, it sounded like the Baseball Project was fairly supportive of Alex Rodriguez during his downtime.
Not this member.
Okay. Well, let's hear the song. We can maybe talk about it when we're done, but let's hear the song. This is 13 about Alex Rodriguez. It comes from the Baseball Project. It's on their album Third, which is out now. You're hearing it on Soundcheck. This is the Baseball Project.
Started in Seattle, you were barely I think you learn how to dope in Texas, just like everybody did. When you came out to the South Bronx, you were anything but clean. The babe had the number three, so you tempted fate and you settled on 13. 13, 13. Some things don't come down to luck, it's just the way that you added up. 13. Numbers or the talent or drive, but sometimes we all need just a little more to make us feel alive. And you were sure that you wouldn't get caught, sneaky and serpentine. Detection is for losers, and losers just don't hang out with us. 13, 13. Some things don't come down to luck, it's just the way that you added up. 13. Sometimes I wonder what I'd do if I had the chance to stand in spikes and shoes. It didn't help when your talents dwindled. It didn't help when your body failed. It didn't help when all your handlers were facing time in jail. It might have helped if you showed remorse, but you don't know what that means. Contrition is for losers until you lose it all. Unlucky like 13, 13, 13. Some things don't come down to luck, it's just the way that you added up. 13, 13, 13. Some things don't come down to luck, it's just the way that you added up. 13.
That sweet, sweet music about Alex Rodriguez of the New York Yankees. The song is called 13. You're hearing the Baseball Project playing live in the Soundcheck studio. Steve Wynn playing guitar and singing. Scott McCoy playing bass and singing. And Linda Pittman playing drums, also singing. And their new album is called Third. It's out now. You know, I want to mention there's two people that are you know, on the DL or down in the minors or something like that. Peter Buck and Mike Mills, who people will know from REM. They're also members of this band. Before we go, I want to get you guys on the record. I'd like to find out your World Series predictions. Who you think is going to be end up in the World Series this year? So, Steve, we're going to start with you.
If I have to leave my fandom and my heart out of it and try to be, you know, more realistic, I think the Dodgers and the Tigers. And,
okay.
I think the Dodgers over the Tigers in six games.
All right. Scott?
Well, I picked the Dodgers and the Tigers preseason. Before the season started, I picked them to be in the World Series. But now I'm going to amend it and say the Dodgers and the A's.
And Linda, besides the Minnesota Twins being in the World Series this season, who will the National League team be?
I actually think it's going to be the Braves.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
A replay of the 1991 World Series.
Yeah,
then.
And, you know, it'll be the same outcome, let's face it. Let's face it. Oh, poor Mike.
Well, my prediction, I'm going to defer a little bit earlier. I'm just going to go Twins, Cardinals, just a rehash of the 1987 World Series. Pretty much the greatest year of my life. Yep. Everything went downhill from there.
That was a great series.
Well, you guys,
right up there.
It has been just terrific having the Baseball Project back here in the Soundtrack Studio. The album is called Third. Steve Wynn, Scott McCoy, Linda Pittman, thanks so much for being on Soundcheck.
Thanks a lot, Joel.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Flipping, trading, collecting, saving, waiting, hoping, dreaming, praying. Tops, clear, Don Ross, Bowman, big league on display. I'm so glad my mom and dad didn't throw mine away. Soon as covered cars and girls punk rock.
Tomorrow on Soundcheck, with John Schaefer out all this week, I'll be talking with the 80s hitmaker Boy George. The former leader of the band Culture Club stops by to talk about his latest album called This Is What I Do. And singer-songwriter Khalees broke into the pop world in a major way when she released her 2003 album Tasty, which featured the Neptunes-produced hit song Milkshake. Now she's back with a brand new album that features a reinvented sound and her culinary talents. We'll hear some of that album, called Food, live in the Soundcheck studio. That's all coming up tomorrow on Soundcheck. For John Schaefer, I'm Joel Meyer.